afternoon, everybody. Today, I'd like to look into a topic which has always interested me. It's always been a topic of great debate and one of great speculation. The question being, will we have technology in the millennium? And if so, what will it be like? The usual response goes one of two ways. Either it'll be 1,000 years of candles and horsepower, or we'll take the best of today's technology with us, for example, solar, hydro, and wind power, and maybe even electric cars. So is there anything really right with the technology of today? Well, without it, we wouldn't be able to do the work that we currently do. Throughout history, God has allowed mankind to use the technologies available at that time for his work, be that print, radio, television, or even now the internet. But just because the technology can be put to a good use, it doesn't make it a good technology. There is no truly good technology available to us today, because man decided to choose for himself what was good and evil, thereby cutting the whole of mankind off from God, and consequently any chance of learning good technology. So let's just take a few moments to look at a few of today's technologies as an example. It doesn't really matter which ones you choose, because the foundation and therefore the end result is the same across the board. First of all, electricity. The electricity we use around our homes and businesses is not necessarily the best form of electricity. When Thomas Edison first set about to create a way to distribute electricity, he started using direct current, basically like a battery, a positive and a negative. This had many benefits, like the ability to store it in batteries, but its biggest downside was that you couldn't distribute it easily. With the later works by Henry, Faraday, and Tesla, who worked extensively with alternating current, a feud developed between the two camps. In the end, AC, or alternating current, won the day for one major reason. It could be centrally produced and distributed. Without getting too technical, there are two main parameters when talking about electricity: voltage and current. Voltage is essentially the amount of power, and current is the rate at which that power is provided. The problem is, as the current increases, the size of the cable required to carry it increases. And the bigger a cable gets, the more expensive it gets. By adopting alternating current, it became possible to increase the voltage and proportionally reduce the current, meaning that the same amount of power could be put down a much smaller and therefore cheaper cable, maximizing profits for the producer. The race to try and win, the race to get the most profit from the new market, was so intense that no research was done on the health implications of living near these high voltage lines, or even living inside houses which are fully surrounded by mains electricity. Since then, many studies have been carried out into the impacts of electromagnetic radiation from high voltage electricity lines, and the results are exactly what you would expect. All the reports funded by the energy companies find no correlation greater than coincidence between the exposure to generated EMF and any form of ill health. On the flip side, all the reports produced by independent research conclude that there is an undeniable link between many of today's ills and exposure to high EMF levels. The World Health Organization even published a paper stating that prolonged exposure to EMF from power lines can cause headaches, fatigue, anxiety, insomnia, various skin sensitivity disorders, rashes, and muscle pain. Electricity brought with it the ability to instantly have light, on demand, whenever you want it. Satan has inspired an age of constant action, running around. Terms like always on and 24/7 have become the norm. But this is not how God created it. Let's turn back to the beginning. Genesis 1, if you would. Obviously very well-known scriptures, but it's worth reading it in a different light, literally. Genesis 1, starting in verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, "Let there be light." and there was light. And God saw that the light, he saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and morning were the first day. If you drop down now to verse 14, and God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night. And let there be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let there be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made also the stars. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and morning were the fourth day. A third of the six-day working week of creation, two full days, were concentrated with separating the light and the dark periods and providing distinctive and very different lights for the day and the night. Since God made the day and the night, which he called good, man has done everything he can to change that so that we can, and all too often have to, work well into the night. The problem with this, as Mr. Andrew Monroe brought out in his sermonette on sleep, the lighting we use has a massive impact on our ability to work and to sleep. The range of light that we can see is quite a narrow band, effectively the colours of the rainbow, from red through green in the middle to violet at the other end of the spectrum. But visible light is only forms part of a much larger spectrum, the electromagnetic spectrum. Below the visible light of red, there is infrared, and then into the realms of microwaves. On the other end, there is ultraviolet, and then X-rays, and eventually gamma rays. God created it so man would work during the day and rest during the night. And at the end of a busy week, God gave man the Sabbath so that he could rest completely and enjoy the creation in which God had placed him. To aid this, as the earth rotates, different wavelengths of light are more predominant at the different times of the day. So early in the morning, the blue light is more pronounced. This triggers the production of serotonin in the brain and helps us to get going. Well, some of us. This is why it's a lot harder to wake up on an overcast morning than it is on a sunny one. As the earth rotates further, we get what is referred to as white light. That is effectively the light from the whole spectrum. During this part of the day, we see more shades of green than any other colour. This makes sense, as man was originally placed in a garden. Then as the day progresses, the light starts to shift towards the red side of the spectrum. This shift to the yellow and orange shades triggers the creation of melatonin in the brain, which starts to slowly slow the body down and get it ready for sleep. After extensive experiments, it was found that productivity of staff in offices went up considerably if the lighting was full spectrum or white light, which makes sense because the brain registers it as daytime. The problem comes in when you work late into the night under white light, then you finish work, you try to go to bed, and your brain is still wide awake. It takes a long time for your brain to unwind, but the best way to do it is to do what you would do naturally. Turn off all white light, and instead use more yellow or orange light, ideally the light from a fire, or even a candle for a few hours before going to bed. Then there is modern communications. When God created the atmosphere, he designed it so that it would filter out lots of the harmful waves at either end of the spectrum, so that man could live on the earth. It's quite bizarre then when you find out that the most prevalent frequency used for communication is 2.45 gigahertz, the self-same frequency used inside a microwave oven to vibrate water molecules so fast that they boil and turn into steam, cooking whatever is around them. The problem with that is that the human body is between 60 and 70% water. All of these technologies are flawed for one reason. They are all built on the foundation of Geth. The DC-based power distribution system, originally designed and built by Edison, could only provide power to a very localized area. This would mean every town or even village would need to have its own power source. And that is not what the inventors wanted. The investors wanted. They wanted to have just a few power stations that could provide power over vast distances, not because it provided a better service, but because it was far more profitable. The same is true of all modern technologies. The build quality of products has deteriorated so dramatically over the last few years because it is more profitable to big business to have consumers throw away their old appliances and devices to buy new ones. When Adam and Eve took of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they took it upon themselves to decide, and in doing so, cut off mankind from ever being able to come up with a pure technology. Mr. Armstrong summed it up nicely in one of the Voice Cries Out articles which appeared in the Worldwide News in December 1980, entitled, What's Wrong with Science and Technology?, where he was inspired to write the following. A tree is known by its fruits. A realistic look at modern science and technology leads only to disillusionment. Their attention is confined to the realm of the material and the mechanical, but problems and evils are spiritual in nature. Peace, happiness, and joy are spiritual values, yet these basics of human welfare are not their concern. The incredible human potential is outside their field. Looking further at their fruits, we do find accelerated inventions, intricate mechanical devices, labor-saving mechanisms, spectacular entertainment and amusement productions. But then we observe the failure to teach people to put added hours, days and weeks of leisure to beneficial uses. Instead, human nature has desired increasing idleness, aversion to work, covetousness, desire to get more and more, and dissatisfaction with it if it ever is successful in its acquisition. Man is desperate for knowledge, but always looks to the wrong source for it. Turn, if you will, to Proverbs 2, and we'll read where we should be looking for our knowledge. In Proverbs 2, starting in verse 1, we read, My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that they incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding, yea, if you criest after knowledge and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and searchest her out as for hidden treasure, then shalt thou understand the fear of the eternal and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. So what will tomorrow's technology be like? Well, the Bible doesn't tell us directly, but it does give us the foundation upon which all future technology will be based. One of the key requirements is printed on the wall over there, Isaiah 11, verse 9. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. There's another well-known one over in Micah 4, which Mr. Jackson warmed up for me nicely the other day. So if you turn briefly, please, to Micah 4, and we'll just read verse 3, or we'll start in verse 3. Micah 4 and verse 3. And he shall judge among the people and rebuke strong nations afar off. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. A colossal amount of modern technology comes from the arms industry. None of it required when the nation's defense force is the very spirit being that created the world in the first place. Carrying on in verse 4. But they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Eternal of Hosts has spoken it. For all people will walk every one in the name of his God, and we will walk in the name of the Eternal our God, for ever and ever. Couple this with the well-known section in Isaiah 5:8, where it is written, Woe unto them that join house to house, that lay field to field. From these passages, it is clear that God's intention is to have a much more micro infrastructure rather than the mass centralized utilities that we see today. If we do have electricity, then it surely won't involve generating it in anything like the power stations that we have today, and there most certainly won't be masses of high voltage power lines all over the countryside. The other day we went for a drive to pick up some things for the hall and had to take a diversion to avoid a long traffic delay. It was by far the most picturesque diversion we've ever taken. But it struck us as we were driving how You drive for miles with no houses at all, and then you come around a corner, and there's a row of terraced houses, all connected directly one to another. It seemed totally unnecessary with all the space and land around them. But the reason, it's simply cheaper to build houses, all using common infrastructure. Shared power lines, drains, sewerage, water supplies, etc. Not to provide a better service to the residents, but to increase the profit for the developers. It is highly likely that any technology in the millennium will be developed on a much more micro level, using methods that God will have to reveal to us, because all the ways we know of at the moment fail the shall not hurt nor destroy rule. As an example, I'm very much into LED lighting. They're amazingly efficient, have a much longer operational life, and much more important to me, they don't flicker like the majority of low energy lighting. At face value, it's a great technology. However, the process of making them is anything but great. The process for extracting specifically indium, gallium, and arsenic, the three main elements required to make LEDs, and solar panels for that matter, is anything but clean, and the byproducts of using them are even worse. Hydro and wind turbines aren't much better, as they both require colossal amounts of polluting industrial processes to make the infrastructure. There are many things we don't understand because mankind was cut off from God and what he intended the elements to be used for. God created a world full of different metals, minerals, and gases, and a raft of laws, some of which man has discovered and called the laws of physics, but man simply can't understand them. A few things to think about as we get ever closer to the time this feast pictures. Modern technology is driven by the way of get, but there is no cooperation between different industries. Everyone is out to exploit customers, not to provide the best service to them. In nature, we see how one system is interdependent on another and can't function properly without it. But when working together, the combined output is greater than the individuals. We call it synergy. It is highly likely that this is the way any technology of the future will work. An example of this that is being researched at the minute, which might give us a clue, is called the Earth battery. If you take a copper tube and stick it in the ground with something like a nail in the middle of it, of the tube, you create in effect a battery cell. Join enough of these together and you'll get a small voltage from the one end. But if you were to place this earth battery alongside of a reed bed used to process domestic sewage on a micro scale, the effects of the battery are amplified 10 to 20 times. It shouldn't come as any surprise, as the science is well known and understood, and yet it has been dispelled by scientists as insignificant. Why? Because the voltages that come from them are so low that they are only usable on a micro scale, and the scientists are funded by the big energy companies who are only interested in profits. The last thing they want is a way for people to generate their own power. The interesting thing with this concept is the Earth itself stores a charge. In effect, the ground itself becomes the largest rechargeable battery. The other day we witnessed that battery being recharged for free in one of the most impressive lightning storms I've seen in the UK. A stunning display of pure power. Current calculations put a single bolt of lightning at over 1 billion volts and in excess of 300,000 amps. Now those might just sound like big numbers, so I thought I'd do some maths to try and find a way of demonstrating just how much power we witnessed the other night. Based on today's local electricity rate, one bolt of lightning would be worth just under £1 million. There are on average 2,000 lightning storms taking place at any one time around the world, resulting in about 100 strikes every second. That equates to just over £8 trillion worth of raw power every day. According to today's scientists, this energy can't be harnessed using any currently available technology. And that's just the point. When we are no longer restricted to today's misguided get-based technology, but instead the Earth will be full of the knowledge of the very being that created the laws of physics in the first place, we can't even imagine what would be possible. As the saying goes, we don't know what we don't know, yet. But one day, very, very soon, we will find out what God would have shared with Adam and Eve if only they had chosen the right tree. And then we will be able to teach real science with full understanding, and finally, technology will be built on the right foundation.